Hey, what's going on? It's Quinn David Furness. Welcome to my show. Quinn David Furness presents the Beantown Podcast for Thursday, March 7th, 2024, Season 7. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? My name is Quinn. I am the key grip, the showrunner, the show director of ceremonies. Right? We got the Oscars on Sunday. Really snuck up on me. In days of yore here on the Beantown Podcast, we used to do Oscar specials with good friend of the show, Ryan Austin Ligon, and one of these days we're going to resurrect it. But, you know, when it started, that was the peak of my, when the show started 7 years ago, it was the peak of my, like, movie expertise, if you will, movie pass, and going to movies multiple times a week, especially in the winter, and, you know, living in Baltimore, not having a ton of friends. All that fun stuff. Now it's like I go to the theaters maybe 3-4 times a year at most, and two of those times is usually just hanging out with family along for a free ride. So it's not on my radar, although I did watch Waiting for Guffman last night, Christopher Guest's first film from the 90s, and I've seen it before, but it had been a long time, so I took half an edible, as I am known to do, and just zoned out, and man, some of those songs at the end in their production just totally killed me. I have probably listened to the Stool song legit 8 to 10 times in the last 24 hours. It's Thursday night at 6 p.m. It's ridiculous. It's so good. And you have to watch it too. You can't just like listen to it and be like, oh, this is kind of a catchy song, because it is. You have to watch it. If you don't know, it's Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Fred Willard, Parker Posey, and Chris Guest all on stage doing choreographed dances with stools. And you have Bob Balaban conducting the orchestra, and he's really into it. That's my other favorite thing about that movie that I'd forgotten about. It plays on your expectations, and that, you know, it's like community theater. And so you just kind of assume the orchestra is going to be really bad, and that would kind of be funny and a joke if the orchestra was bad. The orchestra absolutely kills it in this movie. They're so good. It's ridiculous. I think there's definitely more instruments in on the recording than there are that you could possibly play based off of the actors in the film, but it's fun nonetheless. Listener discretion is advised when you're listening to the Beantown Podcast. Number one, we'll occasionally use some language. Number two, this podcast is objectively terrible. Speaking of objectively terrible, we are in the deep throes. Throes, is that T-H-R-O-E-S? Throes. I think so. Yeah, throes. We are in the deep throes of apartment searching. And I won't get into all the nitty-gritty details of, you know, everything that's been going on, but we've seen, you know, probably 6 or 7 places now. Well, the only reason I wanted to mention this, outside of it just being you know, miserable for us for the last 10 days or so, as I think all apartment searches are, I think if you, unless you are like a billionaire, every apartment search is miserable. But I wanted to just briefly share a cautionary tale. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I want to get to Super Tuesday. I want to get to our trivia, which is Super Tuesday related. And then I want to talk Dune and Dune 2, something I was going to get to last week. That I just ran out of time for and haven't prepared for tonight, which may be good, maybe bad. I don't know. But we'll be helped out because I'm drinking one of my penultimate escapist from Temperance, an American Ale IPA, with a little shot of, not a full shot, maybe 3/4 of a shot of Wild Turkey sprinkled on top, a little Boilermaker. I was reading about Boilermakers before this. Apparently you're supposed to chug it if you do that, and that doesn't sound, chugging a Boilermaker IPA doesn't sound that interesting to me. It sounds like my stomach would explode, so we're going to take it slow with some sips here. The cautionary tale I wanted to tell, and I'm going to do the TLDR version, too long didn't read, is basically that, you know, Monday, Rachel found this great apartment. You know, we do the thing where we do a scan, a fresh scan every day to see what pops up. Contact immediately all the places we like. This is not our first rodeo. I will go out on a limb and say we are very good at apartment hunting. We make time. We go see things. We, you know, respond immediately to hiring managers, property managers, whatever. We're good at this. So we find this spot Monday morning, find out, you know, hey, Tuesday afternoon, they're doing a group showing. It's a very clearly going to be a competitive place based off of its location and a good price. And it checks all of our boxes that, you know, are must-haves for us in this search. So we were like, okay, let's do it, you know, late afternoon on Tuesday. Rachel's at work, so I go. And it is competitive. There's probably, I think there were four other ladies on this tour with me. I'm FaceTiming Rachel. We're like watching all of it. It, you know, checks all of our boxes, get all the information to apply. So we do apply. I literally walk out of the apartment into the alley afterwards and gather up all the things we need for the application on my phone and send it to Rachel. And she sends it over along with her stuff. So then basically 24 hours pass, and they've been super responsive. They have questions for us about, you know, random things, and we're just, you know, giving them responses. Shout out to Rachel, because they kept emailing just Rachel, and Rachel would respond back, including me on the email, and then they would email back and be just Rachel. I was like, I guess they really don't want me to be part of this, but whatever. We finally, like yesterday afternoon, before our application had been approved, which was $100, by the way, Rachel gets a message again. This is all through Rachel, and then just handed down telephone wise to me that the landlord is insisting that they put in a clause in small, very small fine print in the bottom of this lease saying that, you know, we the landlord have the right to get you out of this apartment for, you know, no reason at any point in time with 90 days notice, which, you know, I was actually talking to another realtor today. He's like, oh yeah, I've seen that, but with 60 days notice. So these people were more kind, I guess, with 90 days. But basically, if you don't not follow what I'm saying, that basically means that, you know, they could tell us 5 days after we move in, hey, in 90 days, you got to be out. And then we'd have to go through an entire apartment search again. And one of the reasons we really are moving right now is so that we don't have to move this time next year when we're going to be getting married. No one wants to get married and move at the same time. So I was like, well, if they're insisting that this clause goes in their last second, the chances of us making it through a full 12 months without being told we got to move out, and this, you know, it could happen in the middle of dead of winter, for God's sake, plus getting our whole lease renewed for another 12 months and, you know, having this clause while we have this clause hanging over our heads, the chance of all that going right and just ignoring this red flag that popped up the last second seems small. There's really no way to know, but it seems like the landlord is slapping that in there last second. Like, I don't know, man. So, of course, we get approved. We dropped the 100, and then you just got to make the call, or it's like this is your dream spot location, and you're checking all your boxes, but you're constantly going to have this clause living over your head where it's like they could literally tell you, in June, hey, we sold this place, so you got to move out in September. And it's just wasn't worth it. So that was so tough. Here's the cautionary tale. Check your lease, the whole thing, even the lead and radon testing attachments that seem innocuous upon first glance because you've seen it a million times before. INNOCOUS, I think, innocuous. Because, man, they are sneaky. So, thankfully, it's not our first lease. I've probably signed, six or seven leases at this point in my life. But just brutal, man. So, back to the drawing board. If anyone out there in Beantown is listening and has a sweet apartment for under $2,500 a month, let us know. BeantownPodcast@yahoo.com. Again, that's BeantownPodcast@yahoo.com. Okay, let's keep plowing ahead here. One other thing of note, just because I've been getting the email notifications into our inbox, most action our email inbox has gotten in years. These tote bags, they are being shipped and they are being received. I got a notification just this afternoon that one of them was received. They didn't tell me who it was, so just if you're out there in Beanland, email us, tweet at us at BeantownCast. Let us know. Let us see a picture because no, I don't have I can't, you know, put a picture on the website and say, oh, this is what it looks like because I didn't vet my vendor. Got to write that down. That's a great terminology. Look, I don't want to give anything away in terms of horse names for this year, but that is coming up soon here, like a month, 2 months, something like that, Kentucky Derby. So we'll see if that makes the list. I also had a, there was a great, we were having some wine, went to a comedy show last Saturday night and with some friends, and I have no, I don't have any context for this. I don't remember how it came up. It's just a three-word phrase, and it's a play on something we all know, right? We all know the, you know, toy drive, right? Offices, companies do it, you know, donate to kids at, you know, Christmas time, whatever. What if you did a sex toy drive? This is some, I think where sex toy drive fits in well is like something they would talk about at CPAC that Joe Biden is doing this Christmas. Of course, it's not even Christmas, right? It's the holiday season, right? Like they can't say Christmas. Joe Biden won't let us say Christmas anymore. Instead of, you know, toy drives for local kids, he's him and the immigrants from Mexico are establishing or organizing a sex toy drive to infiltrate our schools. Dude, Florida is going to ban sex toys or something like that. There's probably enough of like a weirdo lobby in Florida, the weirdo lobbyists. I'm thinking people that live in motel rooms like in the Florida Project. I'm thinking that kind of crowd would presumably lobby hard to keep sex toys around, but they might vote to remove them from schools. So that's sort of where the line could be, the fence they might ride, if you will. But anyway, sex toy drive. If anyone wants to throw that into a comedy sketch, I give you my blessing because I think it's a great idea. One other thing before we hit Super Tuesday, which is going to be both a our this week on the campaign trail check-in as well as our trivia, which we might, yeah, we'll get to. Usually I save my trivia for the end, but this ties in well with this week on the campaign trail, and then we'll finish up with Dune and Dune 2 predictions, which we'll get to in a second here. I did just lastly want to mention that on BeanTownPodcast.com, for the February Pleasure Drive Telethon fundraiser, thank you again to all who donated over $400, record-breaking, all that fun stuff this year. We have updated our homepage to include our Wall of Champions, and so if you donated to the show this year, you met our threshold, you can see your name featured in bright lights, basically Broadway without, you know, all the kind of flashiness and gildedness. The BeanTownPodcast.com Wall of Champions. Go check it out, BeanTownPodcast.com. Thank you to everyone who donated. Yeah, closed the book on the pledge drive last week. And if you were in our Topaz Elite Club and you do not yet have your tote bag, just be on the lookout. It might happen like what happened to us with some stuff. We have not gotten mail in this apartment in the entire complex for, or like our pod for probably, it was probably like a 3 week stretch, and it started coming back about a week ago, which is good news. But there was a whole 3 week backup that had not yet been delivered. And even today I was talking to a friend on the street and I was like, yeah, we didn't get mail for 3 weeks. It's coming back now, but it's just the new stuff. What happened to the old stuff? They're holding it somewhere. Why aren't they delivering it? We don't know where they're holding it. Finally today, actually, when I got home from that walk, like 20 minutes after speaking it into existence, the size of this bundle of mail that was sitting on the floor in our mailroom was enormous. And we were able to find a couple of things, although I still have one thing that never showed up, a debit card that I ordered, never came through. Oddly enough, I got the separate thing with my PIN in it, but no actual debit card to activate, so that was fun. But also got our Valentine's Day from friend and supporter and grandparents of the show, Dave and Sal. I think they probably sent that over a month ago, and it just came in today. So a gigantic pile. If you're listening to this, if you're in our apartment complex, if you can hear me upstairs, there's a we said listener discretion is advised, right? There's a shit ton of mail downstairs, and some of it was handwritten and seemed very nice. So, yeah, we needed like a Pony Express stopgap or something, but just brutal. The buzzer was like not working for the USPS master key or whatever, but why wouldn't you just buzz if you're the mailman? They just gave up and stopped trying. So pretty frustrating. And the amount of times we complain to our management company, man, it's not, this isn't one of those things where it's like, this is why we're moving out. Like, not that big of a deal, but I can pile it on. I can have my reasons. Okay, Super Tuesday. This week on the campaign trail, Super Tuesday was 2 days ago, and no big surprises. There were a lot of states. There's like 12 states or something like that, but basically things went the way we thought they were going to go. From NBC News, 5 Super Tuesday takeaways on a big night for Biden and Trump. Takeaway number one, Biden faces fewer speed bumps, but he lost the American Samoa caucus to entrepreneur Jason Palmer, not Jesse Palmer, but not Carson Palmer. This was Jason Palmer. So American Samoa, there were fewer than 100 votes cast, but a big blow for Biden in the American Samoa region, if you will. Nikki Haley, who we now know much more about now, barely made a dent. She won Vermont, which was her second after Washington, D.C., but it didn't do too much. And spoiler alert, she's out. She's gone. Number three, meddling pays off in California. Adam Schiff saw an opportunity in the race for the late Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat and took it. So I guess he's running for Senate. I don't really remember. MAGA makes a move in North Carolina. Let's see. What does that even mean? Oh, Trump endorsed Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who won the GOP primary for Governor Tuesday. And Democrats nominated Attorney General Josh Stein for governor. So that should be fun. And then finally, All Red, not like GOP is all red, like a guy's name, All Red, A-L-L-R-E-D, one word, tackles the opposition in Texas. He's a former NFL linebacker, one of the Democrats' prize recruits of the cycle. And he's running against Senator Ted Cruz, who somehow is still in the Senate. But yeah, All Red won. Who did Colin Allred play for in the NFL? How old is this guy? I don't even know. Colin Allred. Oh, he's already a U.S. representative. Interesting. From Texas. He's only 40 years old. He was a linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. He left football to pursue his JD at Cal Berkeley. And then he worked in the Obama administration. Wow, what a guy. Looks like he was an undrafted free agent in 2006, signed with the Titans, waived for the season, but re-signed in 2007, waived again, promoted to the active roster at the end of 2007, made a regular season debut. He appeared in 32 games and 46 tackles. So he was, you know, a bench warmer, but he got in there. So played basically a handful of games for the Tennessee Titans, and now he's trying to unseat Ted Cruz. So good for you. Colin Allred. That is this week on the campaign trail. But we're not done with Super Tuesday. We have a trivia quiz for you from NPR. And that's going to be coming up right after we give a shout out to our sponsors. Of course, our good friends at Home Pride Oregon. When you need your home inspected in Central Oregon, or maybe a lease inspected, hey, Steve's not a lawyer. He doesn't have the JD that Colin Allred has. But he's seen a lease or two, I imagine, in his time. Home inspections, lease inspections, I don't know, haircut inspections. Take your Cuts by Q look to Steve and ask for an honest assessment as someone who knows hair. Home Pride Oregon, Ben's best Home Pride, home inspector of pride. Home Pride Oregon, inspection perfection. We mentioned Cuts by Q are good friends. When you need something new, something snappy or new, Bob's Weaves, Don Henley from the 1970s, that crazy cool afro, the Eagles YouTube channel just released a live rendition from, you know, whatever, late 70s, something like that, of Lion Eyes. Killer afro from Don Henley back there on the drums. Glenn had a sweet, kind of like Mark Hamill flow going on. Or the kid who played, you know, the Hardy Brothers, Sean Cassidy. And then, you know, Joe Walsh and Randy Meisner. Good stuff. Good stuff, man. When you need a fresh shoe, something snappy or new, call the experts at Cuts by Q. And, of course, our good friends, the Samson Q2U series for crisp, clear audio quality. Starting in Genesis, ending in Exodus, And then like the other 75 Bible books. So really ending in Revelation. When God speaks, he uses a Samson. Okay, and so this week's trivia, rather than waiting till the very end, since it is Super Tuesday related, let's jump into it now. This is a quiz by NPR. It's a multiple choice quiz. It looks somewhat lengthy, 10, 12 questions, something like that, maybe 10. I did not vet this. I just was looking for Super Tuesday information, and I figured let's just look at it now. So these are all multiple choice. I'll give you the responses we have to choose from as we go through it. Nikki Haley is suspending her campaign. Will she be Trump's running mate? And the choices are, it's not impossible, but seems highly unlikely. She says no. C, Trump says no. Or D, all of the above. So these are basically pulled from quotes. Again, A, it's not impossible, but seems highly unlikely. B, she says no. C, Trump says no. D, all of the above. I'm going to go with all of the above because I think that's what it is. And it is. So Nikki Haley said no. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, so we're 1 for 10. Okay. Let's see. Who we just mentioned Jason Palmer, the guy who won American Samoa. So who is Jason Palmer who beat Biden, American Samoa's Democratic caucus? Your choices. A, a Baltimore entrepreneur and investor. B, an American Samoan. C, chaotic good. Or D, former governor of North Dakota. I think I might have given this away already. I don't know other than what I've come across today. I'm pretty sure he's an entrepreneur. So a Baltimore. That was first GarageBand cut out of the day. I was monitoring and I saw it start to get choppy, but I got a little bit aggressive and thought I could get through this quiz, but I was wrong. So I didn't go back and look at where exactly we got cut off. But yeah, Jason Palmer is a Baltimore entrepreneur and investor. Apparently, he aggressively campaigned in American Samoa, but he did not make a visit. What does that even mean? You're sending out, like, MailChimp marketing campaigns to – how do you even get a list of people in Samoa? That's crazy, man. One thing I said when I got cut off was that he's kind of got a Rod Blagojevich-type haircut. So that's got to bode well for his chances in Illinois. Plowing ahead here to question number 3. So while we're on the topic, oh, we got this one. Where is American Samoa? And it's A, on the island of Hispaniola, B, between Hawaii and New Zealand, excuse me, C, off the Alaskan coast, or D, in the Atlantic Ocean. Certainly it's B, between Hawaii and New Zealand. This is kind of fun today. We're playing trivia together. Usually I'm trying to stump the buff, the listener, but today we're going at it together. We're 3 out of 10 so far. The beer and the whiskey combo hasn't thrown us off our game, but maybe it's going to get tougher. Speaking of that, maybe you all heard about this, but I did not. This is the first time seeing this. Where did, in quotes, uncommitted, so it's the title of something, get several thousand votes yesterday? There's a picture of a flyer. It says vote uncommitted presidential primary. Although I hate this because I was going to have to take a guess before I saw this image. But there's an image of a faint outline of the state on this flyer, and so I know it already. So you do your best, see if you can get it. A, Michigan. B, Minnesota. C, North Carolina. Or D, American Samoa. Take your guesses now. I unfortunately saw that the answer was Minnesota. It's an outline of it. So there you go. Minnesota, uncommitted. It's a campaign for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza. Also had a good showing in Colorado and in Michigan. Okay. Number 5. I actually don't know this one. I do know this one because we just read about it. That's a shame. Spoiling everything. What state did Nikki Haley win? I would not have known this before we started. A, Colorado. B, Washington, D.C. C, American Samoa. Or D, Vermont. This is kind of tricky because she did win Washington, D.C., but it's not a state. But they gave it as an option. So confusing, but the answer is Vermont. And NPR is being cheeky. So they say, oh, she also won non-state Washington, D.C. earlier this week. Nice. Thanks. Forgot that it wasn't a state. Here we go. Number 6. I don't know this at all. Did Minnesota Rep. Dean Phillips drop out of the race? Yes, not yet. Or A, yes. B, not yet. C, who? And if I was going with my gut, I would say C, who? but I'm going to go with not yet B. Oh, he did. Our first one wrong. Democrat Dean Phillips dropped out. Oh, he was running for president. I thought he was some low-level city councilman race. But Dean Phillips was running for president, if you've ever heard of him. Not me. Number seven, on what social platform did Taylor Swift exhort her minions to vote? A, X, B, TikTok, C, Instagram, D, Threads. I feel like the only possible answer is Instagram. I feel like Taylor Swift fans don't care about Twitter. TikTok I could see, but I've never really like heard about Taylor Swift and TikTok. And Threads, is that, that's an Instagram knockoff? Like Instagram, Twitter for Instagram? I don't know. I'm going to say Instagram. I can't imagine anything else. Yes, it was Instagram. There we go. Okay, we got, what, three left here, something like that. Next up, this is a quote. I don't know if anticlimactic is the right word, said what state's Democratic Party chair? This is a total guess. A, Maine, B, American Samoa. They love Samoa in this NPR quiz. C, Vermont, D, Iowa. I'm going to guess Maine because Iowa already happened. We've already talked about American Samoa and Vermont. Maine is kind of a new one, so I'm going to guess A, Maine. No, it was Iowa. We're falling off a little bit here. Okay, this is number nine, our penultimate question. Super Tuesday matters to Republicans, but why? I hate using "but why" that way. It's so, like, doesn't make sense. So the question is, Super Tuesday matters to Republicans, but why? A, every Republican candidate who has won Super Tuesday has gone on to be the nominee. B, every Republican candidate who has won Super Tuesday has gone on to be president. That can't be right. C, every Republican candidate who has won Super Tuesday has been over 80 years of age. No way. Or D, every Republican candidate who has won Super Tuesday has been a Libra. So it's got to be A or B. I know I said B, which has gone on to be president. Sounds wacky, but maybe there's something to that. But my gut is go with the simple one, which is A. Every candidate who has won Super Tuesday has gone on to be nominee. That's my guess. There it is. Okay, that is true. All right, and then our last question. Which of these is not a closely watched race? A, Adam Schiff and Steve Garvey in California for Senate. B, Dean Phillips and Jason Palmer in Alabama for Senate. I thought Dean Phillips was running for president. This is so confusing. C, Mark Robinson and Josh Stein for North Carolina governor. Or D, all of California's 52 congressional seats. Well, Dean Phillips is out, so I guess I'm going to guess Dean Phillips and Jason Palmer. There it is. Yeah. It says, yo, it's not even a real race. NPR trying to be tricky. Very, very tricky. So that was an 8 out of 10 for us here live on air. Let us know how you did. Go ahead and email us, beantownpodcast@yahoo.com, or find us on Threads. Show's not on Threads. I've never been on Threads. I don't really know what it is, but maybe you'll find some beanheads there. I don't know. I don't really care. All right, last up here. I wanted to get through this last week. I didn't. So Dune is a book by Frank Herbert, I think. Khalil's uncle, maybe. And Justin's dad, probably. And they made a movie out of it with Timothée and a bunch of other no-names, like Zendaya from Euphoria. And, I don't know, probably Jason Momoa. And probably the guy who plays Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men, Javier Bardem. What do we think? Was he in Dune? Not sure. And I think Oscar Isaac definitely died in the first one, right? But we're going to get to that. Here's the thing with Dune. So Dune 2, both films, I believe, directed by Denis Villeneuve, who you might know from Enemy, the Jake Gyllenhaal movie, Prisoners, Hugh Jackman, Paul Dano. Blade Runner sequel. Those are all Denis Villeneuve. He's French-Canadian films. Very one of my favorite directors solely for his cinematography. What else did he do? Now I'm drawing a blank. Because I love his films. I don't think I'm completely caught up. Well, obviously I'm not. Because I haven't seen Dune. Or Dune 2. He's also done, I can't believe I forgot this. He did Sicario and then, Arrival and then I think we're caught up just due. Yeah. There aren't any other ones, but I love Prisoners. It's a fantastic film. And I would watch Enemy again one of these days. I watched it in college and just didn't get it. But I know people really like it, and I like Jake Gyllenhaal. Although this whole new Roadhouse remake with Jake Gyllenhaal and Colin McGregor, I don't know, man. I'd rather see Gyllenhaal and Ewan McGregor, but I wasn't the caster. Caster and Pollux, right? A couple of stars. So Dune 2 came out last week, and while everyone's concentrated on X and Threads on, you know, the Fleshlight popcorn buckets, and if you don't really know what I'm talking about, just do yourself a gigantic favor and just move past it. Just forget that I put those three words together, Fleshlight popcorn bucket. Just completely just ignore it. Don't rewind. Don't think about it. Enjoy the rest of your life never having joined that pop culture sensation. I've never read Dune. It wasn't really on my radar as a kid, and I don't know if any of my family members ever read it when I was growing up. I don't remember knowing anything about it, but it's like a science fiction classic from what, like the 60s or 70s, something like that. And then, you know, they've made it, you know, movies and probably TV shows, I don't know, but nothing that was really on my radar until this, you know, most recent film and out sequel came out last week. So I was going to basically predict what happened in Dune. If I was doing this the right way, I could have come in with some show notes and actually done like a full script and cast it and all that stuff. But here's what I know about Dune and Dune 2. And here's what I think is going to happen in both of them, because I haven't seen either except for the trailers, nor have I ever read the book. Let's just put it this way. I'm not familiar with the source material outside of a few nuggets. So basically, you got Timothée Chalamet. He's like this young prince. He wears this weird thing in his nose. He's got like a sword, but it's in the future. So they have advanced technology, but they kind of don't. Doesn't make a lot of sense. And his dad is Oscar Isaac. He's like the spice lord of this. They're basically on Tatooine. And Zendaya is like his GF, but he's not allowed to date like me when I was growing up. And also she's, you know, she's black. So she's got to be some sort of, you know, in this kind of futuristic world to have the narrative of like, we're 1,000 years in the future and explore different planets, but also like we're still stuck in Jim Crow era. Like she's definitely a second class citizen. And so they're not supposed to be together. And like Oscar Isaac, the dad, is not like, you know, he's kind of like a cool dad. So he's not coming out and actively saying, oh, I hate her, I don't like her. But he kind of, you know, to her face, but kind of in private to Timothée, he's basically saying stuff like, I don't know, are you sure? Like there's a lot of fish in the sea or worms in the sand. Or speaking of that, so they're on this sandy planet. There's these big worms. These things mean business. They're just like giant tubercles. And they're not really on anyone's side. They just kind of wreak a lot of havoc. And they just kind of mess stuff up. That's sort of their thing. They don't really have much of a character arc. They're partially sentient, but partially not. And you can also ride them. But I don't fully understand, because the amount of leather you need for a saddle that size, we haven't seen those sorts of industrial advancements in our, you know, 2024 technology, but I think this is the year like 4255 or something, so maybe. It's just, how would you get a cow that big? Timothée's mom is probably played by, I don't know, someone cool and British, like Rebecca Ferguson or something. And maybe she, in some scenes, she has an accent. In some scenes, she doesn't. It's an artsy choice. And there's Jason Momoa, who's like the bodyguard of the prince and the prince's son. And he's really good at hand-to-hand combat. He's going to kind of train you. There's Javier Bardem, who's like a mysterious kind of spice merchant that rolls into town one day selling spices and stuff. And their whole economy is based off of spice. And I don't know if it's allspice or nutmeg or myrrh. M-Y-R-H-H or R-R-H. One of those two. Probably two R's, right? You wouldn't put two H's next to each other. It doesn't make sense. It's not necessary. Yeah, so myrrh. I'm going with myrrh. I'm locking in myrrh. Their whole economy is based off of this myrrh. And so basically, this bad guy comes to town. I'm envisioning, you know, the bad guy from Mad Max Fury Road. All those, like, I was going to say bionic people, albino people. This guy's really fat, and he drives one of those cool cars from Mad Max Fury Road. Even though it's futuristic, it's kind of cool. It's like steampunk. Just said, you know what? It's like, you know, you need to belch or swallow or something, but it's just lingering, and it's like, hey, you're telling your body, like, hey, pick a side one way or another. Like, let me belch or let me swallow. I had that for like 10 seconds. It was the worst. So basically, in Dune 1, there's a, you know, these colonizers are coming to steal the spice. Think like Stephen Lang's character from Avatar. And, you know, they got to rise up. And Oscar Isaac is secretly sick. He's got cancer, but he can't let, you know, the kingdom know that because he doesn't want to come across as weak. And so Timothée's got to train up. And Timothée's kind of like this immature little brat. Kind of like in, you know, Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell, except he's not a drug addict. He's a spice addict. And, you know, he's supposed to be training with Aquaman, but he wants to spend all his time riding worms with Zendaya, which is not a euphemism. It actually happens, I think, per this screenplay. And the whole time you're thinking like Javier Bardem's a bad guy because he's kind of mysterious and he's Javier Bardem. But then when this uber villain, I think his name is like Rick or something. I don't know. He's probably played by like the voice of Josh Brolin, which is why he's hosting SNL this week. Is Josh Brolin in Dune? I don't even know. That would make sense. Let's say Josh Brolin's the bad guy, Rick. And at the very end, it's like, you know, Josh Brolin kills Oscar Isaac, you know, he spicifies him to death. Ice Spice is in Dune 2. Hang on, we'll get there. And another, you know, Zendaya's like spunky friend. You don't see a lot of spunk in the silver screen these days, so that's kind of Ice Spice's niche. If her acting is as good as her stage presence, then we are in for a real treat. And at the very end, you know, Josh Brolin is, he's fighting Timothée Chalamet, even though they have laser guns. It's a sword, hand-to-hand combat, because it, you know, dramatic that way. And they're fighting on like an edge of like a big cliff, and the worms are going crazy, and so everything's kind of blowing up and shifting. It's like very tectonical. And at the very end, it's like Josh Brolin's got Timothée beat. He's got the dagger. And Javier Bardem comes out of nowhere and saves Timothée, and, you know, kind of they fall to one side, Timothée and Bardem, who turns out, you know, he's actually a good guy. And then Rick falls to the other side, and then there's a big chasm. And so, you know, that's kind of the cliffhanger for option one. And so that's sort of how Dune 1 ends. And now there's, you know, a two-year gap, three-year gap, whatever it is. Now you get Dune 2. Too many Dunes. Too Dune-y. Dune-a-rific. And really don't, I have no idea what happens in Dune 2. I'm going to just assume that my, you know, premonitions of what occurred, the screenplay for Dune 1, I'm going to assume that's like 90 to 95% accurate because you can't get all the details right. So basically, Dune 2 starts, and it's 3 years in the future. Does the book? Are there two Dune books? I think there's just one. So maybe there's some creative directive liberty. Liberty, 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 liberty. We got to pause. We're going to lose our garage band here. And, okay, so Dune 2 opens, and spoiler, the spice is gone. Oh, no, what do we do? And so basically it's kind of like at the end of A New Hope, where you don't see it off screen, but the rebel base has to relocate. So you've got, you know, the Timothée Chalamet is the king now, and he's not sleeping with Rebecca Ferguson, like his mom, right? It's not an Oedipus thing. But I mean, she's a high quality babe, and it's kind of like inferred that there's some weird stuff going on, implied, but you don't really see it. It's a director's cut. Because we're supposed to like Timothée Chalamet, and usually we don't like guys who sleep with their moms. In traditional Western media, I'll say. I'll quantify it that way. Qualify. I don't know. One of those two. So basically, you know, it's like the rebels at the end of A New Hope, they got found out by, you know, Rick. And we don't really get a lot of backstory on Rick in terms of like, you know, where he got this huge army or, you know, what he wants. I guess he wants the spice, right? But so basically Dune 2 opens and they're like, you know, this really not like Hoth because it's a ripoff, but this really kind of like rocky planet. Like there's not a lot there but rocks. And there's not really any spice that you can see so far. And I'll also mention that, you know, so they went to this new planet, Zorbtron, you know, 4. And Zendaya came with him too. But, like, their relationship has been on the rocks. And it's getting, you know, 3 years have passed. And you're like, oh, what happened? I thought they were solid. And it turns out, you know, Timothée's been really, like, overwhelmed and overworked by the responsibilities of being, you know, Spice Lord now. And Zendaya is like, you know, oh, you got to give you know, I need more time, need more attention. It's like that Chelsea girl from Love is Blind. It's like, who, you know, you went out to a bar for an hour. Who are you with? Yada, yada, yada. So that's kind of how it starts, where like, you know, Zendaya had come with him kind of in secret, but now she's out. Like she's done a huge fight, not like a permanent breakup, but you're like, oh God, what's going to happen next? And then there's Javier Bardem, you know, who saved Timothée at the end of the first Dune, but you were still not like 100% sure where his motives lie, and he's nowhere to be found, which is a creative choice I just made right now, as are all of these, but I don't, you know, I have no idea how I'm going to tie that one up. So yeah, he's out of the picture for the start of this film for sure. Oh, Jason Momoa, he's just kind of like muscle, like, you know, guys in The Wire. Standing on corners, driving on SUVs. He's just the muscle. So he's not really, he doesn't really have that much to do. I don't think he's really that good of an actor. So it kind of fits. So basically, you know, stuff is just like not going that well on, you know, Zorbitron 5 or whatever I'd call this planet. Everyone's kind of depressed and people kind of start to question Timothée's leadership capabilities because there's no spice. And they're like, what are we doing here? And there's definitely going to be, you know, kind of a leader of the, there's like, you know, there's like a schism in, you know, the Timothée kingdom, if you will. And there's definitely going to be, you know, like a, his opponent, you know, the leader of the party, kind of the revolutionary party, could be played by like Russell Brand or something. I don't know. He's kind of out of the spotlight right now, but you know, someone kind of slimy like that who you're, it's very clear like, oh, we're not going to root for this guy. We're going to root for Timmy. Even though he's addicted to spice. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to kind of pan off camera. Still, you know, nothing from Rick yet, Josh Brolin. But basically, so you're going to see Zendaya. She's kind of wandering, meandering, if you will, through, you know, kind of trying to find herself. And she keeps throwing up. And you're like, oh, God, what's going on? Eventually, you learn she's pregnant. Oh, my God. And it's like, was it Timmy's? Hopefully, because it can't afford to really introduce any more major characters right now. But she falls into a cavern. Oh my God. You know, she's ambling through this wilderness, these rocks, and she falls into a crevasse, if you will. And you think, oh my God, she's really stuck. She's in danger. What's going to happen? Well, who shows up to save her ass? Ice Spice. And so the two of them get to talk and, you know, Ice Spice saves her and Ice Spice reveals that, hey, maybe this planet isn't so bad after all. Maybe Zorbitron 5, if you dig under the surface a little bit, has even better spice. It's still called spice, but it's even better spice than, you know, what the original planet called Dune has. And so, but then, you know, Zendaya is like, oh my gosh, I got to go back to Timothy. I got to tell him, like, this could save, you know, change everything, change our fortunes. But Ice Spice is like, no, like, you don't need no man. It's a very, like, feminist, like, you know, positive, you know, agenda. And they're like, you know, Ice Spice is like, they're super racist too. But Zendaya is like, no, I have to go back. And so Ice Spice is like, well, let me come with you. And so, you know, they come back to the community. They, you know, people are, you know, even though they're pretty racist, like, you know, Rebecca Ferguson, even, like, they're happy to see Zendaya. And it's like, you know, she's one of the family, whatever. And they're like, oh, who's this Ice Spice? And Zendaya's like, oh, this is Ice Spice. Turns out, and so they share, you know, the news about, you know, the if you drill down a little bit, it's like fracking, basically. There's some really high-quality spice. It's different spice. It's better spice, but it's still called spice underneath the surface. And so they go through, like, a whole industrial revolution. And, you know, it's like a 30-second music montage. Denis Villeneuve is notorious for his music montages, if you've ever seen, you know, Sicario, for example, where they're, you know, tunneling under the wall. Emily Blunt's, like, wiping sweat away from her eyes. Josh Brolin is like, oh, man, this is some tough work. And he's, like, lifting weights and, you know, running on the border, stuff like that. It's set to the Final Countdown. So, you know, big music montage. Turns out, oh, what is happening? The Timothy's radars detect, oh, no, here come a bunch of enemy ships. It's Josh Brolin. It's Rick. And he's bringing a whole crew. And it's like, how do they find us? What's going on? What do they want from us? Turns out Ice Spice, total double agent. Like, she came across Zendaya, and then Zendaya led her right back to Timothée and Momoa and Rebecca Ferguson and, you know, all these good guys. And even, you know, the, like, Russell Brand character is not with Rick. He's not, like, a bad guy in that sense, but he's just pretty unhelpful. And kind of, like, cowers away when it's time to rise up and fight. So basically there's a big invasion, a big, you know, battle part two. But it turns out not only is there spice, you know, under these rocky crags, there's also worms covered in metal armor. And Timothy the whole time knew that not that these were there, but he didn't know about the spice. I haven't figured that part out yet. But this whole time, Timothy and Momoa have been training an army of metal-covered worms. And so even though the, like, foot soldiers are crazy outnumbered by, you know, Rick's invading army, it seems like they're going to be toast. All, you know, these crazy metal worms come up out of nowhere. Oh, no, here's what it is. You figure out at the very end that the whole time Bardem's been off-screen, we haven't heard from him. Apparently he's... Timothy put him in charge of going underground and training these metal worms. And so apparently Javier Bardem didn't mention that there was better spice down there until just now. But you got all these metal worms. You know, it's like when the light is darkest and, you know, Rick is kicking ass and his armies of, I don't know, I'm thinking, like, you know, the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz and Margaret Hamilton. I'm thinking, you know, Rick's army is a bunch of those things, like with the blue faces, because those things freaked the crap out of me when I was a kid. I hated the flying monkeys. Yeah, but they just get their asses kicked by, you know, by these metal worms, and it's awesome. And at the very end, you know, everyone's happy. No one dies, except for maybe Javier Bardem. I could see him dying, but also not. You know who's going to die? Momoa, for sure. He's going to die right before Bardem comes through in the clutch. You know, comeback moment, Momoa is going to die, and it's going to be pretty emotional because, I don't know, maybe he, I don't know. I was going to say maybe he got with Ice Spice. Well, Ice Spice is a bad guy, but turns out Ice Spice was like, she got played by Rick, Josh Brolin, the only character in this show who has a name other than their actor's name, I guess. But then Ice Spice, when she found out that, you know, Josh Brolin, Rick wanted to invade. That's, you know, that's what he was using Ice Spice for, is to find the location. She regrets it. She's like, oh no, I didn't want, you know, anything bad to happen to Zendaya and Timothy and all that stuff. I just want, you know, thought, you know, he said that they were friends and they were trying to send a message, and I didn't know what sent a message meant. And so, you know, she is siding with Timothy now, and, you know, she falls in love with, Did I just say Momoa's going to die? Yeah, I guess they could fall in love. But then Momoa dies, so I guess it's kind of sad. And then was one other character I wanted to account for, and I can't remember. I don't know. And basically at the end, you know, Timothée, throughout the film and kind of the more quiet moments, Timothée has gone into his listening chamber where he can listen to pre-recorded tapes from Oscar Isaac, you know, before he died in Dune 1, where it's like, son, if you're listening to this, here's, you know, these five leadership qualities from Harvard Business Review that you need to, you know, work on. And so it's kind of emotional. It's a way for Oscar Isaac to get paid for Dune 2, too. But basically at the end, you know, Timothée stands up in front of his kingdom and all the, you know, better spice. And, you know, Rick is dead. We didn't really cover that, but obviously he dies, Josh Brolin. And Timothée, like, holds up his sword because I saw that in the trailer and everyone else holds it up. And, you know, drums are playing like, bum, 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 bum. And cut to black. And it just says Dune 2. Too Dooney. A who done it? No. We knew who done it, although I guess Ice Spice being a double agent was kind of a sneaky one. And that's pretty much how it goes. I was getting something on my teeth. So there you go. That's the plots of Dune 1, Dune 2. That one I would say is more like an 80 to 85% chance of happening because the metal worms, I don't know if I feel good about that. And also the whole film takes place outside of Dune. And so it's like, would you call a movie Dune 2 if they weren't on Dune, if they were on Flughorn 5 or whatever I called it? These are questions that, you know, director kind of has to answer, not really me so much as a podcaster. But there you go. That's the plots to Dune 1, Dune 2. Now I'm going to, you know, go out there and not watch it in theaters because I just have a busy month. But I'll see it on my home television one of these days. Let us know in the comments or by subscribing to the Beantown Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast or by emailing us, beantownpodcast@yahoo.com. If you've read the book, if you've seen the films, how close are we? You know, 2 percentage points off, 5 percentage points off, whatever it is, let us know. That's what I got for you guys. That was a lot of fun. Hopefully you had a good time too. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting our show. Happy Super Tuesday. And happy Oscars. If you want my Oscars best picture prediction, take Oppenheimer. Because it's one of the ones I could remember. Maybe we'll put something out there on the website before Sunday with official picks. Probably not, but maybe. Thank you again to our Wall of Champions. Be on the lookout for your tote bags if you were part of the Topaz Elite Club. That's what I got for you, everyone. Let's cue up our outro music. My name is Quinn David Furness. This is my show. Quinn David Furness presents the Beantown Podcast. Everyone, stay safe. Stay sane. I will check in on you next time. Bye, everyone. Birthday podcast next time. Wow, that crept up on me. Yeesh.